Good morning. Anything arising?
Nothing from the council, Your Honour.
All right. Well, I want to talk to council about the topic of priorities, and I've asked or directed Mr. Page to come back at 2 o'clock so we can do that together. One question for you, Mr. Moore, and you may just want your view on it. How does one regard, on a deemed permit, how does one regard the volumetric conditions on a deemed permit? So this is the take for a large amount of water. And I think it can be expressed in probably one of two ways that I've seen, but anyway, the take authorisation. Is that also regarded as a deemed condition on a deemed permit? It's definitely a deemed permit, but is it a deemed condition? That's an important question, and I'd like your view on that as soon as possible. Yeah. Like before 2 o'clock. So that, you know, that might require you just sort of working through section 413, I think, in particular, and thinking about that condition in particular. So not rights and priorities, sort of know what's happening there, but that volumetric take.
Did you have in mind one of the examples in terms of the deemed permits that has one of these conditions on?
So. I have, but no, it's nothing so clever as that overnight. But so you can take any example that you like of a deemed permit subject to conditions where those conditions include a rate of take.
Oh, right. So it's not, it's the rate of take that's expressed on the permit, not a volumetric.
Well, how does it go? It goes rate of take, and then that can be worked up to volume. Is that right? By applying some math?
Yes.
Yeah, so I'm not bothered about the volume. I'm bothered about the rate of take.
Okay.
It's the actual condition on consent.
So
what is it? Is it a deemed condition?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do think you need to look at some.
Oh, no, I was. I had in my mind the deemed permits that I've seen have what I understand is a rate of take, but I hadn't understood them to have a condition of volumetric.
No, I don't think they do, and I think we worked out in the office how to do the math.
It's a big number.
And so that was fine. We could do the math and we could see what was happening there. But, it's the rate of take. Is that a deemed condition or not? Okay, so that could be significant.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm asking you, but, you know, Ms. Williams, you've got a big interest in this, so you can think about that too.
Ms. Baker Galloway too.
And Ms. Baker Galloway. You got any interest in deemed permits?
Not in terms of the technical detail of we are comfortable with the way the technical detail of the deemed permits are being brought through into the controlled activity rule, put it like that. So to the extent of the mechanics of bringing that through.
But you do have an interest in the topic of deemed permits?
Only to the extent that we support them being rolled over in the current form of use.
Okay, so you've made a submission on that.
Yes.
Okay, no, that's good. So you can think about it too.
I will think about it.
All right. Yep. I've got brains trust.
Yeah.
All thinking about this.
Yeah.
And if you could do so ASAP, that would be really good. And depending on where you get, we may just expand the questions for Dr. Sumbel. Yep.
Right. Mm-hmm. Very good.
Okay. Thank you. And when I say ASAP, I actually mean about lunchtime today, so you need to follow this one through pretty quickly. Yep. Okay.
Cool.
I did just want to say, Your Honour, that I am in regular contact with Ms. Dixon, so not necessarily I'm saying that I can get an answer from Ms. Dixon as well, but certainly I've just been in contact with Ms. Dixon about this issue and in advance of her coming back to attend.
Yeah, so you might say to Ms. Dixon that I flagged it and this morning, and if she had any views as that is the rate of take being condition, she should express those views through you
yes.
before we break for the luncheon adjournment. As I said, I think it's, you know, it's tracking through 413, I think. Mm. And then one would have to know in terms of the back history of those deemed permits, is that a deemed condition or is not? You have to take a view on that. And it'd be good if somebody could alert Mr. Page to the court's question.
Yeah. I can do that as well.
Oh, good.
I know that my friends here today are both taking active part, and I have no intention of taking active part other than right now.
So you're just seeing how we get how we are.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Good. And then the registry's asked for Mr. Page to come back. Cool. All right. At 2:00. So we're in your hands.
Very good. Thank you. So I've given my legal submissions, so I'm not going to repeat those, but I wondered, and I'm in your hands, if it would be helpful if I remind the court of the sort of live positions of Fish and Game.
Yeah, that would be really helpful, but, you know, your case may have evolved.
Yes.
And so it would be good to know where you stand.
Yeah, and so Mr. Farrell provided his supplementary to the joint witness statement when we kept it as narrow as possible, which was our interest in the objective.
Yeah.
And so that was filed, and he marked up the text of the joint witness statement where BF agrees and disagrees on just the paragraphs in respect of the objective. Mm-hmm. What I didn't provide, because I didn't want to give you unnecessary pages, but what I can give you, if you think it would just be helpful even just to have today, is the actual version of the plan change that was appended to the 4 to 6 May JWS with the, you know, the different provisions that Fish and Game are seeking in respect of the table and the non-complying rule in respect of new takes beyond 6 years, so that you could just see how it all meshes together. So,
what happens is that Mr. Moore's first question will be, are you still pursuing that other relief?
Yeah.
You know, and so I actually think it would be helpful.
Yeah.
That would be your first question of Mr. Farrell, wouldn't it?
Precisely what relief was being pursued.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yes. So actually that would be helpful.
Okay, so I'll hand these up, and even if they're just useful today, because things keep moving on, evolving, which is good.
But that's also good because it's going to clearly signal where you're sitting in terms of your relief.
Yeah. Yep. So it just means no one, hopefully people get less lost.
Yep. So. Yep. Thank you.
Right. So as I said, this is a attachment one of the JWS 4 to 6 May. Fish and Game's only live interest in respect of that JWS was the objective. Because in respect of the technical wording of the controlled rule and the restricted discretionary rule in the schedule, Fish and Game, you know, don't have any expertise to bring to the table, so we've let the more engaged people just work through that, and so that's the extent of our active interest. So I've highlighted in yellow, just so you see where it fits Fish and Game's other live points. Mm-hmm. So there's just a technical change on the how to use the regional plan section that's in respect of the non-complying rule for new takes. If we get into the 10A proper, Mr. Farrell's supplementary of 18 May confirms he can support version B of the objective. So you might recall previously, in the March supplementary, we had a more explicit objective about environmental.
Yep.
But Mr. Farrell will explain that he can also support this version B on a similar basis.
Meaning that he would do some back editing to the version that he likes, or that this one of those two versions, or his preferred version, which I've forgotten off the top of my head, in fact, I think he likes B, doesn't he?
Yeah. He likes B.
Yeah, he likes B. B is now sufficient to cover the ground in terms of what he was wanting to achieve.
Correct.
Okay, understood. Okay, so on that basis, cover the ground, on that basis you wouldn't be pursuing the proposed wording.
In the 18 March supplementary.
23
March supplementary, sorry.
23 March. Okay.
So
now, I would signal one thing. I mean, I'm really grateful, you know, that he's rethought his position like this, but the court's bound to have questions, just bound to have questions, on this objective, on either version, and that may pull you in, you know, I don't know where I'm actually formulating the questions. Do you think he ought to be there to take the questions and listen to them?
Next week?
Yeah.
We were hoping to get the objective in terms of fish and game's interest covered today.
Okay, we were probably not ready to talk about the objective today. That's all we're
right.
ready to listen to him and understand where he's coming from. But the wider interest that the court has in the objective, I'm not sure that we can articulate. There's some things that we can start knocking off, I guess, but...
Yeah, I can find out. That's on Tuesday, mm-hmm. isn't it? The objective, or is that on no?
Yes.
I'll find out
probably
in the
Wednesday, I think.
Morning
I'm
tea
sure.
break, Mum.
I'm in a similar position in terms of whether I should be crossing Mr. Farrell on his understanding of the objective, and I do have some questions, and I'd describe them as perhaps preliminary questions. But I had thought I'd probably be exploring that when the witnesses are in panel next week.
I think
so.
That's what we thought, yeah, because we've yet to just find time in our lives.
We can. Mr. Farrell is available on Wednesday.
Okay.
I might not be, but
he makes it a lot easier because we just haven't had the time to sit down and study and formulate our questions. And looking at it, we go, you know, we can see some obvious areas you want to push around. But
No, we can be of assistance.
Okay,
yeah,
that's really helpful.
Cool.
Thank you.
Good. So then, just looking at the first policy 10A21, mm-hmm. In terms of you know, these mechanical changes up front to deal with how the schedule's working, you know, this sort of little carve out for community water supplies, mm-hmm. how that works with the schedule, we've got no problem with any of that, but do emphasise that. Any sort of material exemptions for either community water supplies with their own restricted discretionary rule or renewable energy generation, we're still not supportive of that.
Sorry, what exceptions for what, sorry?
Well, any consenting pathway for either community water supplies or renewable energy generation for longer than 6 years.
Oh, okay. I'm
it's still in opposition to that because of the risk it will just undermine the whole purpose of Plan Change 7 and the implementation of the Land and Water Plan.
And so one of the things, and again, can't talk about TAs because we haven't even heard most of the TA case, but for hydro, we've had one hydro company, though Pioneer's made a submission in relation to Fraser's Dam, but we've got four DEM permits for, who is it?
Trustpower.
And then we signalled, because we're generally concerned about hydro and don't understand the hydro question, because at the moment until yesterday we didn't know where the hydro dams were, so that's probably not a good place for starting. But we know where Trustpower's interests are and thought maybe there could be just an exception for that to get general alignment of those DEM consents with their DEM permits, with their other assets.
Yeah.
And assets, I mean their other permits.
It's downstream in the Waipori.
You've got a view on that? Just carve out on that basis only?
We just haven't heard a good reason from Trustpower about why it's such a big deal to have... them reapply for their DEM permit, the four DEM permits in another 6 years as part of that scheme. So we just haven't had an argument on the merits about why that's such an imposition to reapply once there's fresh water objective set for that FMU, values properly identified, target set, and then they can reapply if they have to reduce some of the use of the water from those four races that flows into Minarangi and down the Waipori, that's the outcome that gives effect to the Land and Water Plan. And why shouldn't that happen in 6 years instead of in 2038?
Yeah.
Or through a laborious consent review.
All right. So you're really holding your position in relation to even like even an exception for trust power?
At the moment.
Meaning that you're going to wait till we hear the closing submission?
No. Meaning that the one, and you can explore this with Mr. Darrell, the one distinguishing factor that you flagged earlier in the week is the climate change. What does the RPS say about it? What are the Climate Change Commission going to say about things like this and the end of the month? That is a really hot topic.
It's a hot topic. Yeah. I mean, and you know, you've got the government's own domestic policy in relation to climate change, including also that we are, 100% renewables in 9 years' time.
Yes.
So, removing constraints on a consenting pathways where the assets are already in place, that may be
that weight that tips it.
Yes, not for new assets, but for that's what we were thinking.
Yeah.
Although we have to make a decision on the new assets as well, but that's what we were thinking.
So
Mr. Farrell's got a view about that too. Is that what you're saying?
Okay. Well, he's familiar with what the regional policy statement in particular says about that climate change. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I'll mark you down as an open mind.
Yes.
All right. That's helpful. But you haven't heard. We haven't heard the TA case, so.
Yes, but we've got much less of an open mind.
Fair enough. Okay, so hydro open mind and TAs.
Trust power open mind. I'd say trust power open mind. Yeah.
Trust power, yes, so, no, yeah. So in fact it is trust power open mind. Okay, good.
Good.
All right.
Right. Then policies, happy with the policies, happy with the. Now that the policy 10A23. No longer refers to no more than minor.
Yeah.
That's good, and the use of avoid.
Mm.
And then this 10A24 is where we've shifted our focus of Dr. Hayes' presumptive table, where, you know, if the degree of hydrological change is more than in the presumptive table, the presumption is the effects are likely to be more than minor unless... Oh, sorry, ecological effects. I have to keep qualifying that. Ecological effects are more than minor unless the appropriate suite of comprehensive assessments establishes otherwise.
Mm-hmm. So that's that leads to your non-complying activity rule?
No. Okay, the non-complying activity rule doesn't need a new policy. The non-complying activity rule still links to 10A22. So for new water, irrespective of any other policies in the plan, only grant consents for new water, I call it new water, because it's not previously authorised, for a duration of no more than 6 years. So a non-complying rule is in respect of this new water, not previously authorised, if someone is seeking for a duration of longer than 6 years.
Okay, so just remind me what this policy does. This policy is like a description of what is a more than minor adverse effect.
Which, 2.4?
Yeah, 2.4.
2.4, yes.
Yeah.
It's a presumptive trigger of what's likely to have a no more than minor ecological effect. And its relevance now, that there's no longer a policy that uses those words, is either when you're considering minor in the context of a notification decision or minor in the context of the other non-complying limb. So then we've got the table, which in Mr. Farrell's March evidence fixed a few of the drafting points that were put to Dr. Hayes, or some of the other points that were put to Dr. Hayes. And in the sort of double columns on the right, in the first draft, it referred to the Schedule 1A in the water plan.
Mm.
But on review of that after the questions from Dr. Hayes and just looking at how up-to-date that Schedule 1A might be, we've gone back to the original words of Dr. Hayes instead.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So then Fish and Game supports the control rule and the restricted discretionary rule as they're trucking along. And if you get to page 10.
Is your, I can't recall whether this document does it or not, does this document include the exception for stranded assets? It doesn't yet, does it? The RE for stranded assets. It seems to, we asked people to think about it, so they thought about it and didn't bring it forward.
Yeah.
And I thought they thought it had merit in their JWS. Anyway, it doesn't. Not, did you have a thought about that? So you remember what we did there or what we suggested there? So
no.
There will be some people who've invested quite some considerable amount of money. Already in infrastructure, it's in the ground, but they're not taking or using water yet.
Yep. Or the cherries have been ordered and they're growing, but they haven't been planted.
Also, the way this could work, actually, it could also apply. If you've got a mainline irrigation, you've got your irrigation mainline in the ground, it is likely to apply to the horticultural industry, viticulture, I guess, but it could also apply to centre pivots.
Mm.
That's what we were told. They are the boundaries.
Mm.
And because of that, we said, that's an it looks like an RD rather than a controlled. And anyway, plans came back and said controlled. We said RD because you probably need to be thinking about contaminants, at least.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, planners thought that was an idea.
But they haven't drafted anything yet.
They haven't drafted anything. Did you have a position on that, too, in terms of...
Ooh, not right now. I'd
not
have to
right now.
Talk to,
Okay,
I'd forgotten about that one, sorry.
Just on that question of the drafting of provisions to deal with the stranded assets, on pages 14 and 15, it might be page 15 of the joint witness statement 4 to 6 May, is the wording that had been considered.
Oh, okay, right.
That's 64 you're referring
to. Yes, it is.
Paragraph 64 is an RD.
Good.
Yes.
So that's an RD. I thought they said they didn't like the RD.
No, the planners landed on the RDA.
Oh, did they? I thought they said they wanted control. I was wondering. So is it the matters of discretion? Actually, maybe it's the matters of discretion, which we thought they perhaps didn't have a look at closely enough. Okay.
Now, that hasn't come through into the version at the back, but the text at least
is there.
Is there.
Okay. Mm. Oh, well, something for you to think about, whether you've got an interest in that. And
so perhaps we're on the ground before March 2020.
Yeah.
Okay. And there's still discretion over area to be irrigated.
Yeah, and I don't know, speaking for myself, thought you might need to have more than just your area. If you could pull in a centre pivot on this. Yeah.
Yep, okay. All right, very good. So then on page 10 of this PC5A, you'll see this non-complying rule in yellow, 10A32.
And that's the rule that Mr. Moore says you've got a scope problem with, and we'll have an argument about that.
Yes. I can address that in legals in June. But we say it's squarely asked for in our submission. Mr. Paul says it's not on the plan change. So we'll round off that argument. But this is for the water that. So it's not for Schedule 2A catchments, because if you're taking water outside of the 2A limits, it's prohibited. So we don't need to worry about that. It's just for non-2A catchments for a duration of more than 6 years for a consent that's not replacing previously authorised take. And if it wasn't non-complying under this rule, you'll recall that it falls under that restricted discretionary rule that is absent of some important things like mana whenua values. And then the definition of community water supply, just sort of observing that we've got sort of no problem with the definition, but it does still encapsulate a wide range of uses,
yeah.
I guess, of that water, which is probably one of the reasons that sits behind our opposition to an exemption for community water supplies,
because of the breadth,
given it's more than just drinking water that's being exempted, that proposed to be exempted.
More than just drinking water. I mean, water consumed for as drinking water.
Yes, yes, as drinking. Yeah, yeah. That basic human need type thing. Yeah.
And kia ora. Right. And so then, and I still have not read the TA stuff, but I did have a look at what Mr. Is it Twiz? Was doing. I expected that he would come back and have another go at that definition, given, you know, the cross-examination, and look at the RD. He seems to have pitched a whole new proposal there, so there'll be no doubt people will have some views on that, whether he can. But did you have a look at what his redrafting at all?
We've looked at it briefly,
yeah.
Yep, and Mr. Farrell's looked at it briefly.
Okay.
Yep.
All right, so Mr. Farrell could answer questions, or are you going to come back and talk to, are you going to come back and, when the TAs present their case, examine?
Wasn't planning to, no. Mm. No. Yeah, we're running quite a confined case, so, and haven't sort of engaged directly in detail in those issues, other than as a matter of principle, trying to uphold the integrity of the plan change.
And so it is the breadth of, so it's the breadth of uses by consumers that cause you to hold to the 6 years.
It's the, one of the, that's the main reason.
Yeah, and the other reason?
Yeah. No, that is the main reason, because if it was that basic human requirement for drinking water that was being provided for, you could see, again, that would tip the weight into justifying slightly different treatment to
like
everybody
longer,
else.
Like a longer permit?
Yes,
longer,
yeah.
But that's not what they're asking.
But that's not what they're asking, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And you're able to say that because your submission on the plan was in support of 6 years.
Yes, It was generally in support of the plan change as notified, subject to some tightening up in the other side of things.
Okay. All right, anything else you need to address before we see your...
No, that was all I proposed to address you on, to set the scene.
Very helpful, thank you.
Good, thank you. So our first witness is Morgan Trotter. So do you confirm your full name is Morgan John Trotter?
Yes, it is.
And you've prepared a brief of evidence dated 5 February 2021 for the purpose of this hearing?
Yes, I have.
You have the experience and expertise set out in paragraphs 1 to 5 of your evidence, but can you update the court as to your current employment?
Yes, since I wrote my evidence, I now have a new role. I'm a project manager for a large river and wetland restoration project in the Upper Tyree, and this is all about encouraging stakeholders and landholders to work together to improve management of freshwater resources in the upper catchment.
And so when did you finish working at Fish and Game and start your new job?
Oh, it's a bit of a blur. approximately 2 months ago.
Right, good. And do you confirm that where you make statements of fact in your brief of evidence, those statements of fact are true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief, and where you express your opinion, you hold that opinion based on your experience and expertise?
Yes, I do.
And in your evidence, you've set out a summary on page 3. Could you please just read that to introduce your evidence to the court?
Many streams in central Otago experience high levels of abstraction and do not have effective environmental flows, such as a minimum or residual flow and associated allocation limit to protect the habitat and the ecological values. This is often due to historic allocation under deemed permits. In general, the lower the minimum flow and or higher the allocation limit, the greater the risk of adverse effects on ecosystem health and trout fishery production. Higher minimum flows, in the order of 80 to 90% of mean annual low flow or MALF, and lower allocation limits, less than 30% of MALF, are likely to have only minor effects on ecosystem values. Outside of these precautionary guidelines, comprehensive assessment on a case-by-case basis would be required.
Thank you. All right, could you please answer any questions?
Mr. Moore?
I have no questions.
Ms. Williams?
No.
Okay. Any other questions? I can indicate I don't have questions.
No, I don't either. I've been through mine.
You are entirely tab-free on my version, so...
Thank you.
OK, no questions. So, thank you very much for your evidence.
Thank you,
Morgan.
Right, so next is Mr. Paragin. So do you confirm your name is Nigel John Paragreen?
I do.
And you've prepared a brief of evidence dated 5 February 2021 for the purpose of this hearing?
Yes.
And you have the qualifications and expertise set out in paragraphs 1 to 3 in your evidence?
Yes.
You have expertise in environmental management and work for Fish and Game, but you are giving this evidence not as an expert, but... as a non-expert, that's correct?
Yes.
And do you confirm that where you make statements of fact, those statements are true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief?
Yes.
That's good. And you have a summary of your evidence at page 5.
I do.
You can commence with that, please.
Ms. Baker-Gallard, I have a few changes that might be...
Oh, sorry, corrections. Yes.
Would you like me to go through them?
Yes, go through the corrections. Thank you.
If we go to paragraph 15 on page 6, there's the first full sentence on the top of page 6 refers to Mr. Farrell's something. That should be evidence. Mr. Farrell's evidence.
Mr. Farrell's evidence, okay.
If we go to page 22 and figure 1, that's listed just below paragraph 83, in the headings labelled most permissive recommendation.
So which, where are you at?
Page 22,
oh, paragraph 22. Right, page 22, and you're looking at a heading?
At the heading in the table in figure one called most permissive recommendation. That should have some additional information in there, which should be to add based on Dr. Hayes's thresholds and plan change 7 timeframes.
And plan change 7 timeframes?
Yes.
Okay.
And there's a similar...
I just need to put that down. Full record. Okay, and a similar change to be made?
Similar change to be made in paragraph 128, which is on page 33.
Where do you want me to make it?
Yes, please. So there are a number of additional pieces of information to add. In the top left box, which says allocation, that should read allocation compared to MALF, M-A-L-F. And two boxes down where it says residual flow, residual, that should say residual flow compared to MALF. In the...
Let everyone catch up.
Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
In the two boxes top right, one which says all relevant streams, that should say all relevant streams in Appendix D.
All right, can't see. Sorry, are we still on paragraph 128? I've got it. Okay,
yep.
The centre column,
center
all relevant
column.
Streams should say all relevant streams
in Appendix
in
D.
Appendix D.
And similarly, the box to its right, that should read streams in Appendix D, where MALF is less than 25 litres per second.
Mm-hmm.
That's the extent of them.
Thank you. So then back to your summary, which is on page 5 on the top of page 6.
Thank you for that. Water allocation has been an issue of concern for fish and game for decades. The 2021 deemed permit deadline has historically been viewed as a time when these issues will be resolved. However, this has not come to pass. The Otago Regional Council has failed to prepare properly for the deemed permit process. The Otago Water Planning Framework is not fit for purpose and does not give effect to the MPSFM. In the years leading up to 2021, Fishing Game has perceived a change in the nature of water abstraction. This is in part due to perverse incentives embedded within the water planning framework. Investment in spray irrigation has likely entrenched reliance on water use in communities, making it more difficult to reduce allocation and return water to rivers. A summary of applications considered by Otago Fishing Game from 2017 until the present as part of the replacement of deemed permit processes demonstrates that applicants generally seek allocations and residual flows which represent a very large degree of alteration to the water body. In many cases, the application is marred by hydrological uncertainty. When compared to the values and risks-based framework described by Dr. Hayes for assessing adverse effects on ecology from surface water abstraction, the applications surmised generally tended towards being high risk and do not meet his recommended thresholds for a no more than minor adverse effect. There was a significant gap between the allocations and residuals sought by applicants and the no more than minor adverse effect threshold criteria developed by Dr. Hayes. Fish and Game accepts the need for short-term consents so that a fit-for-purpose planning framework can be developed. However, the criteria guiding the non-complying pathway in policy 10A23 for longer-term consents or consents that don't otherwise comply with short-term criteria mean the plan change does not work as intended. Fish and Game does not have confidence that the issue of long-term consents of the type characterised in the summary of applications with review conditions will enable over-allocation to be phased out in future. This would delay the implementation of the MPSFM. Fish and Game seeks relief to give better effect to the intent of Plan Change 7 and ensure that the issue of surface water consents does not undermine the implementation of the MPSFM via the development of the land and water regional plan. The changes to Plan Change 7 set out in Mr Farrell's evidence have been refined subsequent to consideration of OIC evidence and other party submissions. And the last paragraph, I feel, is likely no longer relevant as the policy that it refers to has changed.
So you want me to... Sorry, what do you want me to strike out?
Oh, well, yes, we could strike out the entire last sentence of paragraph 15,
which starts with... Of particular emphasis, delete that sentence?
Yes, please.
Yep, OK.
If it would be useful, Your Honour, I also could run through a quick explanation of Appendix D, which is a summary of applications.
It's on page 47.
Yes. It's quite ghastly to look at, but does have some what I hope is valuable information.
Well, looking for a ghastly appendix. So, yeah, I'm just... I might be struggling. Oh, that one. Yeah. There's something ghastly here. You're quite right. Is this the one that looks like this? Because the appendices haven't really come out.
Yes.
Oh, okay, so this is your ghastly appendix.
It is.
Got it.
Would you like me to run through a summary of
what
we see
here? Yeah, I'd be interested to see how that works. Yep.
So this, what I was attempting to achieve is to summarise key characteristics of applications that Fish and Game, in that the Otago Fish and Game has been asked to assess as a party which may provide effective party approval. And this is in the time that I've been with Fish and Game, which is from January 2017 until the present. What I have done is listed the applicant and the water body which they take water from, and then provided key statistics, which if we look at the group of headings titled Environmental Details in the main body of the table.
Mm-hmm.
We start off with the mean annual low flow, which is a naturalised mean annual low flow. If there's an alternative mean annual low flow for the application, which there often is, I've listed an alternative.
Mm-hmm.
If there is, if what I see to be hydrological uncertainty, which in the assumptions you'll see criteria for how I've based that, then I've listed that as yes, there is. If there's a species interaction issue, which I have judged to be of concern, so that's mostly if non-migratory galaxids are interacting with salmonids, I have identified that in that table.
So I've non-migratory galaxids interacting with...
And salmonids, so principally Chinook salmon, brown trout or rainbow trout.
Yeah.
I think we have one example in here of brook char.
Okay.
And then if we go across to the group of headings titled Sort and Application, we have the primary application applied, the residual flow, the term, and if one has been provided, a generalisation of the general summary of the adverse effects from the application. Not all applications provide that general summary.
Yeah.
Some provide individual ones, say the impact on recreation might be no more than minor.
Yeah.
And I haven't bothered with the individual ones because I thought that was... too complicated and too restrictive.
When you say you haven't bothered with the individual ones, what do you mean by that?
So I've only provided the summary of adverse effects where the application has summarised adverse effects in total. If they've looked at one aspect of adverse effects, cultural or only ecological, I haven't.
So overall, this is your overall, their overall summary?
Yes.
And we've got a wee dash, they didn't provide one?
They didn't provide an overall summary.
Oh, but they may have addressed individual impact.
Yeah, they still may have addressed individual impact,
yes.
Okay. And if we take a look at the final group of headings called under calculations, what I've done is I've taken either the allocation as a percentage of your naturalised mean annual low flow or the residual flow as a percentage of the mean annual low flow, and just created that statistic, which can be directly compared to Dr. Hayes's thresholds. And if you'll turn to the one page previously, which must be the first page in the appendix, page 48.
Just pause there a second. And so then where do you want me to go?
One page previously.
One page previous? Okay.
you should see two tables with which aggregate or summarise the information in those ghastly tables to something that's much more useful. So you can see if we take the first indicator, which is listed on the top left of the first table, which is listed as primary allocation as a percentage of mean annual load flow, we can see the summary from each of the applications that have been summarised in the table. The mean number is 522%, which is the allocation is 522% of the mean annual load flow, and the median is 206%. And we can see that the most permissive recommendation from Dr. Hayes's thresholds is merely 30%. You can do a similar exercise with the residual flow as a percentage of mouth, and you can see a similar, quite significant gap between where the applications are hoping, what the applications are hoping to achieve, and what Dr. Hayes has recommended for ecology effects only. The really important thing that, that this table shows is just how far apart the recommendations are from the reality that we're seeing in the applications.
When you're talking about ecology, was that the top or bottom table you were referring to there?
Both. These only deal with Dr. Hayes's recommendations, which are limited only to ecology adverse effects.
And can you give me again what your definition of naturalised means?
It's not natural state. It's the flow in a river without the impact of abstraction or the impoundment of water through dams. In my mind, I think of it as helpfully informing us of how much water is available to be allocated.
And so this is what's been applied for. This isn't what the council granted.
Yeah, yes.
So you haven't done that end of the equation in terms of a comparison?
No, unfortunately, I didn't have time when producing this to request the information from the regional council. But I did still think this was useful. I'm not aware of any other witnesses providing this type of summary.
Sure, I'm not saying it wasn't useful. I was just interested to see whether even on a few of the cases you might have looked at where they'd ended up in terms of what had ultimately been granted. That was all.
I can anecdotally I can say that my experience has been the application generally sits around the generally gets granted with similar levels of allocation and residual flow, particularly allocation, because it's usually calculated using that policy 642, which is...
Oh, the allocation,
the
sinking lid.
Yeah, part of the sinking lid policy.
Purported to be a sinking lid.
Yeah, so rarely Fish and Game has been able to reduce allocation successfully on applications. Typically, they tend to go through without much change from the application.
So, if my commissioner doesn't know, it's good that I don't know, because I'm challenged mathematically sometimes. So, I was wondering mathematically what has been described when you say that in terms of the summary of applications, on average, people are seeking 522% of mean annual low flow, whereas the recommendation is only 30% of mean annual low flow. So what does that even look like? Is that you're saying take everything out of the river and then some more? Or what does 500% mean?
What does it mean practically?
Yeah.
So if we think about a mean annual low flow, low flows, the 7 days, the lowest flows across the year, averaged across multiple years.
So you just need to slow
years.
Down and start that sentence again, do you think?
If we think of the mean annual low flow, I understand it to be the... if it's a 7 day mean annual low flow, that is the seven lowest consecutive days of flow across the year, averaged across the entire data set that we have. Mm-hmm. So it's an average of an average.
Yeah.
So we're looking at that low flow as the bottleneck in the in the water body. If we take an allocation, You would imagine an allocation can only take the amount of water that is actually present in the water body. So if we take a hypothetical, you might say there's 100 litres a second, 100 litre a second mouth stream. So at low flows, there'd be
I'll slow that down again.
Sorry.
You might say that 100 litres per second is mouth 3, is what I heard you say?
You might say in a hypothetical stream, we have 100 litres a second at mouth.
At mouth. Okay. So you need to take it really slowly because I'm imagining, at the same time you're talking, I'm picturing in my mind what you're actually saying. Yep. Okay, so 100 litres per second at mouth. Got it?
At mouth. So if we had an allocation that was 10 litres a second, then the maths is relatively simple. We would have an allocation that's 10% of mean annual low flow. You could only take 10% of the water at low flows.
At low flow.
If we had an allocation that was 200 litres a second, then we'd have a 200% allocation as a percentage of mean annual low flow.
So if your mean annual low flow is 100, what does an allocation of 200 look like if it's not taking all of the water out?
It means you can take all of the water out at 100 litres a second, plus you can also take an additional, you can, as more water comes in with higher flows, you could take additional water. So as the stream rises above its mouth flows, you could take additional water, which means that in this hypothetical situation, any flows between 0 and 200 litres a second could be abstracted, and flows above 200 litres a second would then go to the water body.
And so when people on average are applying for 522% of mouth, they are taking flows on your 100 litre per second example between 0 and...
And 500,
yeah.
Yeah, so they could abstract the stream dry five times over at low flows, essentially.
Yeah. Mm. Okay. Give you another Mac example. So just say the mean annual low flow is 600 litres per second. So that is your hypothetical. How does your 522% apply there?
Well, that would be around about five times 600 litres per second because it's...
So you can extract water down to 100 litres per second, so well below mouth. You know, how does that 500... Where's the distribution of the 500%?
Oh, sorry, I misunderstood. I thought you were saying it was a 600 litre a second mean annual low flow.
Yeah, there is. Okay, so that's the proposition. So now how do you apply your 522%? What does that look like when people are taking water?
So if we just get the allocation correct in my mind, the allocation would be 500% of 600 litres a second, which is, can someone help me out, 3,000 litres a second, 3 cubics. So that means that If your allocation is 3 cubics and your mean annual low flow is 600 litres a second in the stream, the abstractor would be able to abstract water from 0 litres a second up to flows at 3,000 litres a second. And what that essentially means in practice is that a river only stays at its low flows for a very small amount of time. It sort of varies around them. What it essentially means is that as the river varies around, the irrigator could take all water. That's a particularly extreme example, but we do have examples similar to it. The trust power example is similar to that, where they're able to take water in some cases from, they leave no residual flow, they take all the water from the perennial stream, and they're able to take water up to insane amounts. You know, for a stream that might have 12 litres a second in it, they might be able to take 600 litres out of it. I actually do have an example of a trust power one in here. It is the most extreme of the examples that we've used, that we've that I've summarised. Here it is. Trust power. I've on page. I'm sorry, these appendices don't have page numbers. 47, 48, 49, 50, 51. Should be page 52. Or
how many pages
helps.
From the back of the table?
From the back of the table? Closer to the front than the back, I imagine.
Okay. What's the permit at the top of the page?
The permit at the top of the page is Queenstown Lakes District Council, permit number 2007-049.
I have it. Trust Power.
Trust Power. And then I have summarised Shepherd's Stream, which was the only race that I had application that I'd reviewed at the time of writing this. It has a modelled mouth of 3 litres a second and a primary allocation of 220 litres a second mm-hmm. with a zero residual flow. And that leaves an allocation as a percentage of mouth of 7,567% and a residual as a percentage of mouth as zero.
Alrighty. Good. We're okay with them. Yeah, we're okay. Good with math.
So, if I just understand the residual flow column, is that below the point of take?
In most cases, yes.
Yes. So, the ones that have minimum flows, how have you accounted for the minimum flow?
There are some things that I had to jettison in order to make this table
right.
only as ghastly as
sure.
this.
Sure, okay.
And one of those was the minimum flow. For example, I can't remember if Trust Power is seeking to be held to a minimum flow or not. I suspect not. Whereas others may be. On the question about where the residual flow is measured, in some select cases, a residual flow might be measured for a catchment. For example, in the Kyburn, which I believe is...
It's on one page 49, it's the first one.
Is it?
Table.
Ah, so
I think halfway down.
In the Kyburn, there is a residual flow at the bottom of the catchment.
Right, so that's the 200 that you've got there.
Yeah, and there is a section on notes where I've attached notes and indicated those cases. It's just very difficult to get a huge amount of information into something that's
sure,
legible.
Sure, no, I'm just trying to understand what you do have in
there. Sorry, where's the carbon? Is that what's
well,
the
it's just halfway
halfway
down,
on the same page,
yeah.
or are the
which is on the first page of the table.
On the first page, carbon. Okay,
so it's page 49.
Yep. And
one of the big issues that we have, or that Fish and Game has, I shouldn't speak on behalf of other parties. One of the issues that Fish and Game has is that there's often a lot of hydrological uncertainty, especially in the smaller tributaries. We spend a lot of time working in smaller tributaries. A lot of these takes have been taking for a very long time and not had a whole heap of oversight, not had a whole lot of interest in them. And so there's generally not a great deal of information. Often people haven't gone in and put, say, 5 years' worth of a flow recorder in, so we don't have observed naturalised mouth data. In other cases where people have put in flow recorders, it might be impacted by a take upstream. And so we have to find alternative ways to try and get basic information. One of those things that we can do is use a modelled mouth.
A modelled, okay.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. there's smart people out there who can estimate a mouth. And there's a very helpful NIWA national level model, which I think Mr. Henderson ran through in his evidence, that can provide relatively accurate estimates. So in these cases where there's an alternative mouth, some of the cases, I've listed them where two hydrologists have come to separate mouth outcomes. In some cases, there's been a disagreement about using the naturalised mouth or the observed mouth. And in other cases, they're simply a modelled mouth has been used against an individual's estimate of mouth. It's one of the complexities of dealing with these deemed permits. We just have a very sparse amount of information.
And so, with that in mind, alternate mouth, which is a modelled mouth, on the page that you're looking at with Kyburn, there's very little by way of alternate marks.
Mm-hmm.
But there is one is provided for the kidney take at the top of the page.
Yes.
And so have you looked at your, have you calculated, have you done your calculations using both the mouth, the naturalised mouth and the alternate mouth, or just for the naturalised mouth?
I have only listed naturalised mouth for this one. I've designated, in the table, I've designated the spaces where I've used a modelled mouth as that mouth figure being underlined.
So so like you've done that for Lone Star?
Nat Creek.
Okay.
21 is the alternative mouth that I've listed, which is the modelled mouth. Yep. And then 11 is a mouth that's been provided, I would say, by the applicant.
And so your answer in the right-hand column under calculation for Lone Star is 382% as an allocation against a modelled mouth in that case.
For Nant Creek, that's I've always used the primary mouth figure for that calculation, so it's against the 11 litres a second.
Okay,
which
so you've never used the modelled mouth.
Never used the alternative mouth.
So why did you underline it?
So I could understand which mouth figures are modelled and which mouth figures result from an estimate or observation from a person. Okay. So if you look, for example, at Annett's Creek, the very first entry for Kinney, there's two mouth estimates, neither of which are modelled from Shiny. So that's two hydrologists have provided alternative, most likely two hydrologists have provided alternative mouth estimates, and you can see that they're quite different, which makes it incredibly difficult as an applicant to try and work out what's going on.
Okay. Alrighty. Okay, so just returning to your summary page, which is page 48.
Mm-hmm.
So it's unnumbered. The second box, what are you doing there? So it's a comparison of primary allocation stats for small streams. We've got a summary of the application that's 522% of naturalised mouth, presumably.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And streams of mouth is greater than, okay, so where the mouth is greater than 25 litres per second. So you've carved out streams with a flow greater than 25 litres per second to examine what's actually happening there on average.
Stream. The intention was streams that are less than 25 litres a second.
Sorry, I'm not that challenged. All right, less. Okay, so very small streams indeed. Okay.
And what this table, I feel quite effectively shows is that the allocations on those smaller streams are generally larger than if we look at the total, and the residuals left over are generally much smaller.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think I understand that.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Peregrine. Can you please answer any questions from Mr. Moore?
Okay, Mr. Moore.
Good morning.
Now, I too was going to do some mathematics, and we will get to the mathematics shortly. But before we do, you made an addition to table figure 1 at your paragraph 83. Mm-hmm. And you inserted some words in relation to the right-hand column based on Dr. Hayes' thresholds and PC7 timeframes. Are you able to just explain what you mean by the PC7 timeframes in the context of this table? I didn't quite follow.
Ah, yes, apologies. So if we look at the very last row, which on the left-hand bottom box is labelled term sort in brackets years, you can see I've provided a mean and a median. So those are the mean and median terms requested across the applications that I've summarised. and I've listed in the box to its right, I've listed two additional figures. One is a controlled pathway figure, and the other one is a non-complying pathway figure. I suppose that's quite lazy writing on my part. I apologise. These refer to the two terms that were available, I guess, maximum terms that were available in the notified wording of Plan Change 7, one being 6 years and the other one being a maximum of 15 years.
So you've retrofitted the Plan Change 7 timeframes from the notified version against the data set set out in your Appendix D?
Yes.
Okay, I understand. So it's a hypothetical in that regard?
Yes.
Yes. Very good. On to the mathematics then. If I can take you to your paragraph 102.
Yep.
I had in mind a similar exercise, but this time in the context of the Manaherikia River and seeking to gain an understanding of what's currently happening in terms of the existing allocation compared to what the allocation and the minimum flow might look like if the Dr. Hayes thresholds were to be applied. Mm-hmm. So when I read your paragraph at 102, the first flow statistic there is the naturalised MALF assumed to be 4 QMEX.
Yes.
Now, in terms of the Manaherikia River, do you know where that MALF statistic relates to?
It's measured at campground, from what I understand.
And in terms of the current situation, do you have an understanding as to what the current minimum flow being observed at campground is?
There's a voluntary minimum flow, which is not listed in the water plan, of 900 litres a second.
And then when we look at the other flow statistics here, you note that the paper allocation in the Manaherikia is 32 QMEX.
Yes.
And an estimate of actual use of 16 QMEX.
Yes, and I can say as of 2 days ago that 16 QMEX figure has been updated because the ORC has released its consultation document called Manaherikia Choices, and I think that the figure would now be updated to 8 QMEX.
Eight. But actual use is 8, not 16?
Not 16, so. And that's measured in a similar way to in the methodologies. It's a summation of all of the maximum allocation or instantaneous rates of take that have been used across the catchment in a typical season.
Okay, well, we'll use 8 as the most up-to-date estimate of actual use for the purposes of the mathematics. Fortunately, we're dealing in fours, which hopefully will help, but we will see. So looking at the naturalised MALF and thinking about the thresholds recommended by Dr. Hayes, are we at this point to look at the in relation to the minimum flow, the percentage relating to streams with a flow of less than 5 QMEX?
I believe we are. I mean, that's a mean flow less than 5 QMEX, and I think the Manaherikia falls into that category. Does it?
So assuming that to be the case, the percentage of MALF recommended for a minimum flow by Dr. Hayes is 90% of the MALF.
I'm sorry, Mr. Moore, I'm just thinking through this and I think I may have steered you in the wrong direction. I think we are perhaps looking at the second column abstraction from a surface body with a mean flow greater than 5 QMEX. I think the mean flow may be somewhere around 12 or something like
gotta
that.
Got to tell me we were looking at for your digits. So when you say we think we're looking at surface abstraction greater than 5 QMEX, which page are you looking at?
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. I pulled up while Mr. Moore was talking, I pulled up the document that you would have received this morning, which is the changes that Mr. Farrell has made to the May 6th, to the draft amendments as at May 6th. And I've turned to page, unhelpfully not...
Four, I think.
Yeah, where it's got table 10A24.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
And so take it really slowly.
So
which column are you looking at?
So third column from the left is what I'm suggesting the main hierarchy would fall into, which is abstraction from surface water body with a mean flow greater than 5 cumics per second.
Greater than 5 cumics per second. Why are we looking at that table? Sorry. Isn't it less than? Sorry, I thought, Marihakia, what is the naturalised flow? Assumed to be 4 cubic metres per second. Yeah?
Yes, that's a mean annual low flow.
Mean annual low
flow. Dr. Hayes's recommendations separate based on mean flow, which will be higher.
Would it help if just a paragraph explained the difference between a mean flow
and a mean annual low flow? Yeah, yeah.
And why it's...
Yep.
Yes.
Distinguishing thing.
Okay, so what's the first definition? So it's a mean flow, and the second definition was going to be the mean annual flow.
Yes.
Is that right? Okay, so your first definition for mean flow is what?
So the mean flow is the average flow that you'd find the river at, I imagine. I'll have to, excuse me, I'm appearing as a lay witness, and I'm certainly not a hydrologist, but my understanding is that it is the average flow in the river.
So an average flow in the river, and the mean annual low flow, mean annual flow or mean annual low flow?
Mean annual low flow.
Low flow, and your definition is?
The same as we covered earlier, Mom.
So just give me it again.
It is the, if we talk about the 7-day mean annual low flow, the 7 lowest consecutive days of flow across the year, averaged across the entire data set.
So 7-day lowest, I'm not writing it down, so you have to go a bit slower, 7-day...
The 7 consecutive days of lowest flow across the year. And then...
And then average that across your data set.
Yes.
Okay. And so this table, the column that you want us to deal with, it, which is the top column, third from the left... is a body with a mean flow, so it's not dealing with MALF at all, but a mean flow, or the average flow in the river. Okay? But your evidence is dealing with naturalised MALF.
Yes.
Yes. So, okay. And so is your understanding that Manahitakia mean flow is greater than 5 cumics? Is that what you say?
That is my understanding, yes.
You there?
Yes, yes.
Sorry to be so smooth.
No, I'm in the right box on the table, I think.
Okay, well, I am now.
So when we think about the Manahitakia River, a mean flow greater than 5 cumics, if we were to then apply the Dr. Hayes table, the minimum flow would be then no less than 80% of the 7-day MALF. So the 7-day MALF, as I understand it, is the 4 cumics recorded at paragraph 102 of your evidence?
Yes.
And if then we were to calculate 80% of that figure, we would get to 3,200 litres per second.
Yes, I think so.
So that would be the minimum flow applying the Dr. Hayes thresholds for ecological health.
Yes.
And then to put that into context with the voluntary minimum flow at present of 900 litres per second, that's showing the difference between the current voluntary flow and that which Dr. Hayes would recommend in terms of an ecological flow.
Yes, quite a substantial difference.
So that's dealing with the minimum flow component. I want to deal next with the allocation. So to get an understanding of the current actual allocation compared to what the outcome of the Dr. Hayes table would look like. So when I read your paragraph 102, you say that now the actual use is 8 cumics.
Mm-hmm.
So when we go back to the table and we look to see how much allocation should be made in terms of ecological values, we would stay in the third column from the left, so the same abstraction from surface water body with mean of greater than 5 cumex. And we would go down to the allocation rate, which is the bottom row in the table.
Yes.
And there we see that the flow allocations of no more than 30% of 7-day mouth.
Yes.
So to calculate the size of the allocation block, that would be 30% of 4,000.
Which I'm struggling to do on the top of my head. Is that 1.2 cumex?
Yes, 4.3 is 1.2.
Yes. 30% of 4,000 is actually 4 cumex, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Oh, did you come up with a number?
Yes, I think we came up with 1.2 cumex, or 1,200 litres. Okay. But I don't have a calculator with me.
Oh, okay.
I can open my computer to start.
Yeah, you do.
Up.
Yeah, it's good to get it right.
That's right.
Okay, so it's only me who can't do the math properly, so everyone else is fine. But you might as well verify it.
So 4,000 times 0.3. Oh, that's not right. 0.3 is 1,200 litres a second. Yes.
So when we think about the difference between the application of the Dr. Hayes thresholds and we think about the current degree of allocation, which is now estimated to be 8 cumex or 8,000 litres per second, there's a significant difference between those two figures.
Yes, there is.
Thank you. Those are my questions.
Okay, Commissioner, have you got nobody else in the room want questions? No? Okay, any re-examination?
No, thank you, Mark.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner, have you got questions?
I was just wanting to understand your evidence in relation to dams, which is at the very end of your evidence, so it should be hard they shouldn't be hard to find.
Yep. Pardon me.
So you've got two outcomes that you see. So perhaps you could just elaborate on the first one, your A.
Yes. So if there were, say there were a carve-out for dams and they would be considering long-term applications prior to the notification of, or prior to the land and water plan being operational, there is a risk that we may not get outcomes that are consistent with the land and water plan, and I'm particularly thinking about guidance which is relevant to areas in the national policy statement, such as over-allocation. And it's intrinsically, I know you'd like to separate them out, it is intrinsically linked with the second point, B. Dams are a critical part, in at least my mind, of the way, of the tools that we have to address over-allocation. They can be a thing that both helps over-allocation in some cases, say by moving to a reliance on stored water rather than low-flow water and the run-of-river water. Or you could use a dam to impound more water, expand the area under irrigation, and I would argue that that would mean that it is more likely that the catchment would have over-allocation in it rather than less likely in that situation. So they can be beneficial, or they can be negative environmentally. So
you've got a concern that there isn't any regional guidance in terms of the water plan at the moment?
There will be regional guidance in the water plan. I'm concerned that it doesn't, that guidance doesn't give effect to the National Policy Statement 2020. It doesn't include key concepts such as phasing out over-allocation or what Te Manawatu Wai means in the local context and how we implement that. And I'm concerned that because dams have such a close link to water allocation in catchments and over-allocation in catchments, I'm concerned that if one were to go before the other, or if they weren't joined together, we'd miss an opportunity for integrated management in the catchment.
Right, so what you're saying is such regional guidance as there is in the current water plan doesn't do what it might need to do under the MPS fresh water.
Yeah, that's a succinct way of putting it, thank you.
And we have had planning evidence about the national policy statement on renewables, mm-hmm. and the fact that there's no guidance in the regional plan in relation to that matter.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I have heard planning witnesses talk on that topic.
Yes, and there's the suggestion that when you're thinking about dams and applications for dams, then you might need to be going up the tree to the NPS on renewables, as well as presumably thinking about the NPS freshwater or the land and water regional plan to come, but still needing to be thinking about that ahead of time.
Yes, it sounds incredibly complicated. I must admit I'm not as up to speed on the NPS REG as I am on the NPS FM, and I understand there are a significant degree of nuance amongst the planners' discussions on the topic.
Okay, so I might be better to ask Mr. Farrell about that when
I think
he
so,
comes
yes.
along. Okay, thank you. And So there's quite a bit in your evidence about the resourcing implications of these processes, and we've heard that from other parties as well. And so on that resourcing front then, the control and the restricted discretionary applications, what level of resourcing might you need for that? Presumably, since I think non-notifications are part of those, you wouldn't need any resourcing to deal with those.
Mm. Plan change 7 is beneficial in that sense for us. Fish and Game has been struggling to resource properly the deemed permit process to date, and that's left us unable to speak out and represent licence holders in a way that we would like to. With Plan Change 7, because of the non-notification, because we're relatively happy with where the controlled activity pathway is going, it means that we can focus our resources on the land and water plan with the hope of getting positive outcomes there for our licence holders and for the environment. And I would hope that flows through so that when 6 years comes up and these permits come up again, if that's the term that's granted on those consents, I'd hope that the land and water plan is sufficient so that we can deal with it without a additional significant resource burden.
Okay, so presumably you'd still be keeping an eye on any non-complying activity applications.
I guess we'd have to. I didn't mean to interrupt.
That's fine. So go on. You were responding to my question.
One of the things, one of the points that I note in my evidence is that when the hydrological alteration is quite small, or when the term is quite small, we have more confidence allocating less resources to it, and it's a quicker, simpler process for us. As an affected party, I mean providing affected party approval, when the hydrological alteration proposed is significant and the term is not significant, we really do feel the need to investigate thoroughly and interrogate the information, and that takes because the adverse effects could be quite large, and that takes a lot of resources and creates a lot of complexity. So if there was a non-complying consent and the term that was applied, say, was 6 years, because the policy that's proposed by Mr. Pelsenmaker is quite directive, then I'd be more comfortable looking at that. Oh, we'd be more comfortable with that approach, and I imagine it would take less resources to deal with.
Okay. Thank you.
Have you got any questions?
No, thank you.
And I don't have any questions. So is there anything arising from the court's questions?
Thank you, ma'am.
All right. Very good. Okay. Well, thank you very much for your evidence, and I'm right on top of that now, and I do appreciate the amount of work that's gone onto those tables as well, so that's really helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to take morning tea.
Thank you, ma'am.
The next witness, Mr. Cole of the Fish and Game, I can indicate I don't have any questions for Mr. Cole.
I don't have any questions.
No, I don't either.
Do you have any questions?
Just
one question.
No, I don't think.
So that's a clean sweep?
Clean sweep. Do we just need to swear a man still?
Well, how about...
we'll just in by consent.
I guess we could admit that by consent and for the court to place whatever weight it sees fit on the evidence. Is that how you want to do it? Or you can swear a man, I don't mind. But you might... You know, I can think of one or two other witnesses where we didn't have questions, but they felt important that to get across the executive summary. So I'm
ready. I'd actually like a summary to be read into the record.
Okay.
So perhaps
we'll still take a cup of tea.
Yes, you can.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All rise.